this melody, Vasilio? You know this one? Radhakali Chandi's Srimad Bhagavatam class. Today is June the 5th, Monday morning. Today is Pandava Nirjala Ekadasi. For those who are fasting. So today we're beginning from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto. This is chapter number 15. And we have verse number 1 up on the board. Okay. So please repeat. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Jitendriyasya Yuktasya Jita Swaswasya Yogina Mayitara Yatascheta Upatishtati Siddhaya Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Jitendriyasya Yuktasya Jita Swasasya Yogina Mayedara Yatashchaita Upatishtanti Siddhaya Shri Bhagavan Vacha Jitendriyasya Yuktasya Jita Swasyasa Yogina Mayitara Yatashcheta Upatishtanti Siddhaya Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Jitendriyasya Yuktasya Jita Swasasya Yogina Mayedaryatascheta Upatishtanti Siddhaya. Ladies, okay, no? Okay, word for word, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Jita Indriyasya, for one who has conquered his senses, Yuktasya, who has steadied the mind, Jita Swasasya, and conquered his breathing system, Yogina, of such a yogi, Mayi, in me, Darayata, fixing, Cheta, his consciousness, Upatishtanti, appear, Siddhaya, the mystic perfection of yoga. Translation and purports by the loving disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, My dear Uddhava, the mystic perfections of yoga are acquired by a yogi who has conquered his senses, steadied his mind, conquered the breathing process, and fixed his mind on me. Please repeat. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, My dear Uddhava, the mystic perfections of yoga are acquired by a yogi who has conquered his senses, steadied his mind, conquered the breathing process, and fixed his mind on me. I'm going to read a few more verses here. Sri Uddhava said, My dear Lord Achyuta, by what process can mystic perfection be achieved? And what is the nature of such perfection? How many mystic perfections are there? Please explain these things to me. Indeed, you are the bestower of all mystic perfections. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, The masters of the yoga system have declared that there are 18 types of mystic perfection and meditation, of which 8 are primary, having their shelter in me, and 10 are secondary, appearing from the material modes of goodness. Purport, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains the word matpradan as follows. Lord Krishna is naturally the shelter of the 8 primary mystic potencies and meditations. Because such perfections emanate from the Lord's personal potency, and thus they are fully developed only within the Lord Himself, and the Lord's personal associates. When materialistic persons mechanically acquire such potencies, the perfections awarded are of an inferior degree and are considered to be manifestations of illusion or maya. A pure devotee of the Lord automatically receives from the Lord wonderful potencies to execute his devotional service. If for sense gratification one mechanically endeavors to acquire mystic perfections, then these perfections are certainly considered to be inferior expansions of the Lord's external potency. And here's a short introduction to this chapter. It says here, this chapter describes the 8 primary and 10 minor mystic perfections. They are developed by fixing one's mind in yoga, but they are ultimately obstructions to achieving the spiritual abode of Lord Vishnu. Now that's very interesting. These perfections are obstructions for going back to Godhead. Being questioned by Uddhava, Lord Sri Krishna describes the characteristics of the 18 mystic perfections and the particular kind of meditation by which each is achieved. In conclusion, Krishna states that for one who desires to perform pure devotional service to the personality of Godhead, the achievement of these mystic perfections is a waste of time, because they distract one from proper worship. All these perfections are automatically offered to a pure devotee, but he does not accept them unless used in the yoga of devotional service. These perfections are valueless. A devotee simply sees that the personality of Godhead is always present everywhere, both externally and internally, and depends completely upon Krishna. Om Gnat Manandasya Garanjana Shalakaya Chakshusun Milyatam Jaina Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Hupistam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamaya Tadati Swapadantikam. So did I have you worried there? Did you think you're going to have to learn 18 different perfections? That sounds like a lot, doesn't it? But it's described here that for those who desire sense gratification, these types of things are very attractive. The different perfections that they can acquire are, for example, controlling someone else's mind. There are yogis that do that. Prabhupada talks about how they enter into a group of people, innocent followers or worshipers, and they control their minds and they take away all their money and leave. And did you get to see the life story of Srila Prabhupada by Bhakti True Maharaj, the Abhay series? Did you watch that? Did you see that, Rasalia? No? It's pretty good. It was aired on television in India. They've improved it too over after they re-edited it. They added some really nice dancing and different kind of cultural aspects to it. But even from the very beginning, it was very nice in that anybody who was a little interested in spiritual life, you learned what it meant to become a devotee, and you learned how to practice devotional service under the guidance of a spiritual master. So it was really nice for that. And there was also the different relationships between Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhakti Saranta Saraswati and Gorkhashordas Babaji and Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Jagannath Das Babaji were all included in that. So that was very nice also. There's one very exciting scene where there was a famous yogi who had achieved these perfections, as it's mentioned here, for a materialistic purpose. Trying to remember his name. His followers would chant his name. It was something like Ram, something, Ram Babu. Anyway, he had become very popular for many reasons. He could display different types of mystic feats, like he could walk through walls, he could light fire by mantra, he could help women that could not have children to bear children. And there were other things he could do. So he had gained a large following, and the British government had become very alarmed. They became very concerned that he may turn his followers against the British government, because in those days there was a lot of political unrest between the British, the Hindus, and the Muslims. In fact, they were killing each other, brutally killing each other. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was asked by the British government to stop this yogi. And the yogi was also engaged in some different illegal and nefarious activity as well, and because of his mystic power. And so Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he went to the yogi and asked the yogi if he would stop. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he pointed out to the yogi that that it was against all scriptural injunctions to be worshipped as God. So the yogi told Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur that he gained a tremendous amount of satisfaction when people bowed down to him and they would call his name and they would call him Bhagavan, they would call him God. And he told Bhaktivinoda Thakur that the satisfaction that he was getting from being worshipped was so great, was so intense, was so thrilling for him that he would not give it up. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he went outside this yogi's cave. The yogi was living inside of a large cave, and bigger than this temple room. It was a huge area inside a cave. And he would light fires there, sacrificial fires, and his followers would follow, who were there. His followers, their tantric followers. The history of tantric is quite, should I say, dangerous. There's a lot of black magic that's practiced, and a lot of very strange types of worship are conducted by those who follow tantric yoga, tantric worship. For example, I'll give you just one example of it. What they'll do is they'll smear their entire body with the blood of chickens, and they'll drink liquor and become grossly intoxicated. And then they perform a type of sacrifice where they'll establish like a deity, like maybe they'll draw a kind of, usually they're kind of scary looking faces on, say, for example, a watermelon. And then they'll make different offerings to this scary deity, this watermelon deity, with the idea that they can call powerful ghosts inside of this deity to accept their offerings. But Srila Prabhupada comments about it, and what eventually happens is they worship these ghosts and other powerful demoniac beings like Rakshasas and other types of powerful, very powerful demoniac creatures. And with the idea that they allow the ghost to go within their body. And usually for two reasons. One, so that they can experience intense sense gratification. Because the reason Prabhupada gives is that ghosts are people like us whose physical body was destroyed, but they still have their material desires within their body, within their subtle body. So the gross body is destroyed, but the subtle body of the mind, intelligence, and false ego still exists. So let's say, for example, a ghost wants to eat something, right? So there's some fancy preparation that's being served somewhere, and a ghost comes in that place, and the ghost wants to eat that, but the ghost cannot pick it up. The ghost cannot taste it, because the ghost's physical body is destroyed. So usually ghosts become, they're very frustrated and they're very angry in their nature. Anybody that tries to enjoy sense and gratification, whether it's with the physical body or the subtle body, they generally become frustrated because the happiness that comes from material things is temporary. So whether you enjoy it or you don't enjoy it, still your happiness is limited. And when it comes to that limit, when your happiness ends, you become frustrated and depressed and delusioned. And that's how people become angry and violent, because they're frustrated, very deeply frustrated. So ghosts especially become frustrated. So, without going too deeply into this explanation of black magic or black worship, tantric worship, these yogis, for example, they'll call ghosts within themselves by grossly contaminating themselves and by a particular type of worship where they call the ghosts. And this is very well known, especially in different parts of India. Men and women, even there are classes of people, like, for example, Putana was this type of worshiper. Putana is mentioned like as a Kachari witch, and they could uproot a small tree and they could fly through the air on this tree by the power of this tantric worship. So anyway, what happens is the ghost comes within the body, and because the ghost has intense, unfulfilled desires, the ghost takes over the person's body and enacts in wild types of sense enjoyment. So the person that's within that body gets to experience that. So that's one reason they perform this type of worship. And then the other reason they do it is so that they can kill and disturb other people. So what they'll do is they draw these ghosts within themselves, and then with their own hatred and envy for other people and other living beings, they invoke the ghost. So this is what this yogi was doing to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And what happened was Bhaktivinoda Thakur's family, everybody in his family became extremely ill, as if they were going to die. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur's wife had a dream where somebody was chasing her through the forest and was going to rape her and kill her. And so many things were coming up, very inauspicious. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur finally took it upon himself, and he went there to the yogi and he challenged the yogi. And so this yogi, he invoked very powerful types of demoniac ghosts. There are many of them, different types of them. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he read Srimad Bhagavatam. So he sat outside the yogi's cave and he read the Srimad Bhagavatam. So what Prabhupada describes is if someone is a pure devotee, and if someone sends a demon or a ghost, some type of, or tries to create something horrible to happen, the potency of Krishna protects that devotee. And so then what happens if a ghost or some type of demoniac being cannot fulfill its purposes? Then it goes back to the person that, you know, invoked them or who made that arrangement, and they kill that person. So this yogi was eventually killed by his own arrangement. And that's kind of the history of this. So This type of worship, here it's mentioned that sometimes devotees who develop these mystic powers, they utilize this mystic potency, these mystic potencies in Krishna's service. And there are many examples of that. For example, we have a battle between Krishna's son, or is it his grandson, Aniruddha? I think it's his grandson, actually, now that we're talking about it. Aniruddha, and there was a powerful demon. And in this particular battle, Aniruddha, he invokes a divine potency, one of these mystic potencies. It's called Mahavidya. Vidya means knowledge. Maha means great. And he utilizes this potency to kill this demoniac personality. We have other examples. Once Srila Prabhupada, he was asked, Prabhupada, great mystics and yogis all have some type of mystic power, so what is your mystic power? So on two different examples, Prabhupada mentioned different things. On one occasion, Prabhupada said, my mystic power is that I can take people that are addicted to illicit sex, gambling, meat eating, and intoxication, and I can transform them into pure Vaishnavas. Practically, there's nobody in the history of the world that we have, in modern history at least, that's been able to do that, except for Srila Prabhupada and Prabhupada's followers. And on another occasion, Prabhupada said, I can be within a room of the most gorgeous women and not be at all attracted to sense gratification. So that's one of the qualifications of a pure devotee that we were reading here, that a pure devotee is transcendental even to the mode of goodness. So there are 8 primary perfections, and there are 10 secondary perfections. And it's described here that these actually appear from the material mode of goodness. So in the purport, Vishnu Chakravarti is saying that even materialistic people can achieve these perfections. So that means that even coming to the mode of goodness is not sufficient to perform pure devotional service, right? We have the mode of ignorance, mode of passion, and mode of goodness, and then we have pure goodness, Vishuddha Sattva. So there's a whole section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, part 2, that describes even when we practice devotional service, we can be performing devotional service in the mode of ignorance. Devotional service in the mode of goodness, in the mode of ignorance, primarily is described as somebody that only cares about the deity and doesn't care about the devotees, somebody who's very proud, somebody that's a separatist, means they just do things alone. They don't ever want to be together with the devotees. And devotional service in the mode of passion is primarily when we do things for fame and recognition, position, and it deals primarily with attracting the opposite sex using devotional service, like doing things to attract the girls or boys. And then devotional service in the mode of goodness, it's a little more subtle. Devotional service in the mode of goodness means when we perform devotional service with the idea that of gaining satisfaction for ourselves. That I'm peaceful, I'm happy, and I'm knowledgeable, I'm gaining knowledge. But Prabhupada points out that such devotional service leads to false ego, which is the most subtle material element, because we begin to think that we're better than other people. We have gained a sense of superiority over others. We're happier than other people. We're more knowledgeable than other people. So, and pure goodness in the spiritual world means when we're only concerned with satisfying the devotees and Krishna, and we're no longer interested in some type of personal ambition. So coming to that stage is primarily achieved by practicing the system that Srila Prabhupada's giving us of the morning and evening program, and then working throughout the day for Krishna. That means even if we're holding a job, that means using our money for Krishna's service, or if we have an ability to kind of free ourselves a little bit from that, then spending time trying to help others to develop Krishna consciousness. But here, you know, the main point that's given is that these perfections are actually considered to be a waste of time for a devotee. Why? Because a devotee really wants to just see Krishna pleased and not try to gain anything for themselves. There's many verses that describe this. There's one, Shasti Shanti. Can't remember the Sanskrit right now, but it's describing the different types of liberation, gaining the same type, entering the spiritual world, gaining the same type of body as the Supreme Lord, gaining the opulences of the Supreme Lord, gaining the knowledge of the Supreme Lord. Same type of body, and living in this within the same planet as the Supreme Lord. So a devotee, even Lord Chaitanya, he prayed that let me take birth after birth. He was not praying to the Lord for anything, even something spiritual. So yeah, that's the main point here. But that's not to say that the devotees in the spiritual world are not given that. It's described that Krishna loves the devotees so much, someone who surrenders to Krishna and who actually shows pure love for Krishna, that Krishna, he gives himself to the devotees. So we have so many examples, like there's one story where Lord Chaitanya and his friends... Lord Chaitanya would always organize different dramas, and Lord Chaitanya would always play the parts of the women, like Lakshmi Devi, or he would dress up as a woman, or Radharani, or other women that are in Krishna's pastimes. And the devotees would dress up like that. Also, on one occasion, they were enacting the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra. And this is when Lord Chaitanya was quite young, and he was playing with his friends. Lord Chaitanya... and what happened was, nobody wanted to be the demon. Nobody wanted to be Ravan. Nobody wanted to be fight against Ram and Hanuman. So Lord Chaitanya said, okay, these trees will be, this is Ravan, this big tree. So as they started to play, suddenly the trees turned into Ravan and all the demons. And all the boys turned into Hanuman and the monkeys. And they were actually entered into Krishna's pastimes, into Lord Ramachandra's pastimes. And the boys, even though they were very young, they were only like 5 and 6 years old, they could pull trees out of the ground, like the monkey warriors. Or like Hanuman could jump for hundreds and hundreds of miles through the air. So the boys were given all these mystic powers to please the Lord, to perform these pastimes. So, and there's many examples of that. There's many examples of that. If you read in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, when Gopakumara came to the gateway of the spiritual world, he was waiting there to get permission to enter the spiritual world from the gatekeepers there, and he saw the residents of Vaikuntha. When they would cross through the gateways, their bodies would transform into different forms. And Sanatana Goswami, he mentions that the residents of the spiritual world, they have a primary form that and way of serving the Lord that is most dear to them. But if they desire, they can transform into different forms. And there's different examples given. Some devotees, once they turned into some deer, and then another day they were something else, and another day something else. So it's not that the spiritual world and the devotees are somehow at a loss. You know, everything that's achievable, whether it's mystical or whether it's something great materially, can be achieved by the devotees. But the greatest achievement, as it's pointed out here, is to actually be reunited with Krishna in loving devotional service. And that example we see amongst so many of the senior devotees, and especially the example of Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada many times would say that it seems that I'm sitting in Los Angeles, but actually I'm sitting in Goloka Vrindavan. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he elaborates upon that statement in the Jiva Dharma. There's a beautiful description about it. There's the whole system of it's called Jivan Mukta, where a person is liberated even though they're within this material world. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur uses the terminology that there is outer space and there is inner space. So a devotee, through the via media of their pure heart, they have direct access to Krishna and Krishna's pastimes. And he quotes, there's a number of statements, but one particular statement that's very interesting that's tied to this, it's given by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, and he describes that when we hear the pastimes of Krishna, they are non-different than Krishna, right? We have that saying that God is absolute, he's non-different, right? Krishna is non-different than his name, his form, his pastimes, his associates, and his paraphernalia. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, what he states is that when through our purified consciousness we hear the pastimes of Krishna, those pastimes are non-different than Krishna. So Krishna witnesses, he can see us entering his pastimes through the via media of our own consciousness. So it's not just like, you know, you're just reading something like in a normal magazine or book, but actually when we're hearing these pastimes, when we're reading these teachings, these pastimes, Krishna is conscious of us entering his pastimes through our consciousness. And the more that's purified, the more we have direct perception of Krishna through our consciousness. Vishnu Chakravarti breaks it into three basic categories. But the ultimate goal is that one sees Krishna face to face, just like we're looking at each other in this particular, you know, class. So I'm sorry, I started doing the Nirjal fast and I'm really tired, so I'm kind of dull this morning. But this is a wonderful section here. We're going to learn all about mystic perfections in this particular chapter. I kind of gave you the conclusion of the whole thing, but it is very interesting. We're going to hear about things like becoming smaller than the smaller and smallest and greater than the greatest. And actually, there's a whole essay that's given by Bhaktivinoda Thakur about this, and in where he shows that the terminology or the concept of God as Bhagavan is the complete understanding of God above all other religious concepts. And he has this dialogue with the greatest Muslim scholar of that time. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he reaccounts, it's a historical event, and there's a group of renowned spiritual masters who are the disciples of the six Goswamis. And So these are disciples of the six Goswamis. Perhaps the most famous of them, he was the disciple of Swarup Damodar Goswami, and he wrote elaborately on understanding the different 196 different types of devotional feelings that a pure devotee has. Srila Gurudev, he used part of that in his Jagannath Priya Natakam in the section called the Natyaka Shastra. But in this dialogue, the greatest Muslim scholar of the Emperor of India, this is about 450 years ago, just after Lord Chaitanya's disappearance and during the time of Narottam Das Thakur. And this scholar, along with 50 other scholars, come to a Gaur Purnim festival, and they challenge the devotees to a dialogue. And in this particular dialogue, the discussion of the name Allah and the name Bhagavan is brought up. And Allah means that God is the greatest. And Bhagavan means that God has six perfections, that he's the greatest. He's the most wealthy. He's the most intelligent. He's the source of all potencies, mystic powers, and he's all renounced. Hare Krishna, good morning. So, but it's a beautiful dialogue, and it goes much deeper than that, than just that discussion. That in that discussion, the Muslim scholar accepts that the terminology of Bhagavan is superior to the calling God Allah. But then they go much deeper into that. They go into the concept of God manifesting within the material creation. And because the Muslims say that a deity is actually a manifestation of Satan, Muslims accept the existence of Satan, which is really interesting in that that whole concept and many of the concepts that are brought out by this Muslim scholar, you can see have been embraced by Christianity. But beyond that, these amazing Vaishnavas, they give very deep scientific and philosophical information, establishing the deity worship and the practice of devotional service as the perfection of spiritual life. So I'll stop here. I don't know if you guys have any questions or comments about this, but stay tuned. You're going to go deeply into mystic yoga. So maybe there's something here you find valuable in your devotional service. Yeah?
Thank you for the next class. It just something occurred to me. I don't know whether if this is right thinking, but that instead of, you know, the mystic perfections were all there and available to the Prabhupada.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the wonderful class. And a question occurred to me, an observation, and I just tell me if you think it's true or not. That Srila Prabhupada had, you know, we know Srila Prabhupada had available to him the mystic perfections. He was Krishna's pure devotee, but it doesn't seem like he ever used them beyond just, you know. Like he could have made things more easy for himself, but he never did. And maybe that was because he was just relying on Krishna. As a pure devotee, it was like more enjoyable or more clear to him that he just wanted whatever Krishna wanted. So even if he had to suffer, or even if he had to go to hell, or whatever he had to do, or even have to suffer heart attacks, right? He didn't care because he didn't want to rely on, he didn't need to say, well, I can use my mystic perfections to, you know, get rid of this heart. He didn't do that. He was just like, even that he saw as Krishna's mercy. So he was just accepting it because he saw everything as Krishna's love.
There's a number of dialogues about, Srila Prabhupada's relationship with Krishna and certainly Prabhupada was observing Krishna directly, once Srila Gurudev asked Prabhupada, why do you read your own books? And Prabhupada said, because Krishna sat and dictated this to me. There's many occasions when Prabhupada was in Los Angeles and he had an open dialogue that he spoke to Srila Gurudev about with Sri Sri Rukmini Dwarkadish, and Prabhupada himself was so disgusted with India and the people of India for having rejected him and rejected Krishna consciousness in the name of, you know, knowing everything about Krishna. Prabhupada had actually, within himself, had the conviction that he would never return to India. And but Rukmini Dwarkadish spoke to him and told him that they wanted him to return to Vrindavan. And so then after he went there and they established the Krishna Balaram temple, Prabhupada said, now I can understand why Krishna was sending me here, because he wanted to give me a temple 100 times better than the Los Angeles temple. And but we have examples like in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have Parikshit Maharaj, who was cursed by the son of a Brahmin. What was his name? Shuni? Shringi, thank you. Yeah, Shringi cursed Parikshit Maharaj. So Prabhupada, he openly discusses how Parikshit Maharaj was a Mahabhagavat, and he could have easily counteracted the words of that Brahmin boy, but that he accepted it as Krishna's mercy and Krishna's arrangement. So, you know, it's not to say that a devotee is a pushover, or that a devotee can't protect themselves if they need to, but, you know, the main point, and that you brought up very nicely, is that the devotee remains, you know, fixed in the surrender to Krishna and tries to see everything as Krishna's arrangement. Something was coming to me, and Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Gurudev, oh, that's what it was. So Prabhupada, what he said is that even if something's Krishna's arrangement, sometimes the devotee may not want to accept it. And Prabhupada was speaking specifically about his own death. That Krishna was calling him back to the spiritual world, but the devotees weren't willing to accept that. So Prabhupada, he said, well then if you're serious about that, you know, then you have to really take this upon yourself. You know, and Prabhupada introduced the idea of praying to the Lord, if you so desire, then, you know, not demanding anything from Krishna, but by, you know, employing calling Krishna, calling out to Krishna to give his, you know, causeless mercy in a particular situation. So sometimes the devotees do step forward to alter Krishna's plans if there's some, you know, greater purpose to be served. And so Prabhupada, he writes about how the devotee is actually even more merciful than Krishna himself, because the devotees will sometimes, you know, extend Krishna's mercy or alter Krishna's plans to help others like that. So I hope that helps. Okay, you guys, so have a great day. Great to see the kids out of school. Are you having a good time out of school? Thumbs up. Hey, did you guys ever see that? This Finland film, there's a YouTube film about Finland's education system. About 10 years ago, Finland and the United States were equal. We were both number 18 in the world in education. Now America is number 38 and Finland is number 1. You know what the first thing they did in Finland? Let's ask the kids what they think about this, okay? The first thing they did in Finland is they stopped all homework. You like that idea? No homework. Yeah, if you watch that film, I mean, you know, watch with your parents, of course. There's a couple things. They have an American news reporter. I don't really like his vocabulary. But when you get in, when you actually see the part when you're talking with the teachers of Finland and the kids, kind of what they've done is, the way I see it anyway, is they've gone and they've changed their education system to more of a von Ashram system, and they've changed it. Like when I was a kid, I kind of saw the end of this, but it was more of an apprentice system. I mean, of course, that still exists, but not to the extent of actually freeing people up to be independent. Prabhupada, he emphasizes that our education should free us to become independent, to be able to support ourselves independently of taking up an occupation or an employment from someone else. So, you know, in modern society, there's both pluses and minuses to that. But the basic idea that I wanted to say is that what they've done in Finland is they let kids more or less be kids. Like a younger child only goes to school for 2 to 3 hours per day. And but the kids like Rasalila's age, what they do with them is they let them pick out things that they like to do. Like say they focus on one girl. She wants to learn how to design clothing. So not only do they send her to a clothing designer, you know, to learn from an actual person that's successful as a clothing designer, but the teachers create a curriculum that focuses on clothing design. So, you know, they'll teach the kids, you know, what type of math they need, what type of, you know, and they do testing based on clothing design. So I just thought it's very progressive, and the kids are really excited about it, you know, and they'll send them out like 2 or 3 at a time, you know, to a particular location, and it's quite organized quite well, but it seems like it's really working. I mean, they're number one in the world right now. So yeah. What do you think about that kind of school, Rasalila and Rade? Well, cool. I hope that, you know. I talked to a few senior educators now and then when I'm out on book distribution. I talked to a lady in Tulsa. I brought a group of devotees out in Tulsa, Oklahoma at the May Fest to do book distribution. And one of the devotees' friends, his wife, had been an educator for 19 years. So I was talking to her, you know, why is there so much focus on like these tag tests, you know, where there's no more creativity in the education system. I mean, you're more or less kind of just, you know, prodded on to be able to go through these exams. And she said, yeah, we're really seeing the downside of it, and we're working to change that now. So, I mean, people are opening themselves up to some change. So if we're there, you know, on the educational forefront, in that new magazine, Hare Krishna, celebrating 50 years, if you read the chapter on education, I'm really impressed, very, very impressed by how the devotees are taking a mainstream social identity in the education field, which I know Srila Gurudev, he really thought that was probably the most important, you know, social identity our society and our members could have as being leaders in the educational field. And, of course, you know, our educators are impressive. I mean, even the girls who teach here, when you have them give class, I mean, if you go right down the list, like, remember, there was a lady who left here. God, now her name just slipped from my mind. She was a teacher here. She got married. She was an American. She has a sister that looks very similar to her. She's a really good singer. Well, Shamli's one for sure. But before that, Priya, Gopi Priya, she was one, but she's Indian. No, she's an American. Who? You know who I'm talking about? She's a really good singer. She used to come and lead kirtan too. Well, we have Vrinda Priya, of course, who lives here. But there's another one. Hey, Sanatha Prabhu, do you remember there was an American lady, she was teaching in the Gurukul, she left here, she got married and she left here. She was a really good kirtan leader. Hare Krishna. This is your sister?
Yes, my sister.
Oh, and your niece, Hare Krishna. Yeah, Sanatha was talking all about you. Anyway, but what my point is that we have so many teachers, even if you bring Nitya Kishori or you bring Gopi Gita or you bring, who else is teaching now? Who else? Mother who? Krishna Priya. Yeah, I mean, you bring any teacher here, their classes are really good, right? Yeah. Okay, so anyway, I'll stop here, you guys. All right, have a great day. And please introduce your sister and your niece. Your niece? Ganesh? Danish with a D.
T.
T. Tanish. I never heard that name. What does that mean?
Golden?
The golden Sanskrit language. Oh, is that a name for Saraswati? Golden Sanskrit. That's very beautiful. Do you know some Sanskrit? You know this Hare Krishna mantra, right? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. That's the Maha Mantra. All Sanskrit is contained within the mantra.
Yes.
And golden is Lord Chaitanya. And then what about your sister? Are you two having a good time here?
Yes.
In Dallas? Where are you from? India?
India.
Which place?
Mumbai.
Mumbai. I got married in Mumbai at the Hare Krishna land in Juhu. Have you been there? That's a beautiful temple, isn't it? I really like their restaurant and their theater. That's a great combination, you know, eating really well and going to watch devotees and do drama. Well, nice. Did you take them to the Dallas Arboretum?
Not yet.
Oh, I see. There's a beautiful botanical garden. It's been so rainy now, but it won like best garden for the whole country of America. It's a very beautiful place. Yeah, very beautiful place. And there's a lot of good shopping here. Do you like to shop? Come on, you're supposed to say, I love shopping. What do you two like to do? What do you like to do? You like going to shows? There's a AT&T Performing Arts Center, and they have some girls there right now performing Bharatanatyam, a big, it's a national dance performance that's crossing the country. Yeah, I didn't see all the details about it, but I've been to some really nice dance dramas in Singapore where they performed like Janmashtami, the birth of Krishna. They had an orchestra of like 25 musicians. They had a drama team and a dance team work together all about Krishna Janmashtami. It was very, very beautiful. Very beautiful. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then, you know, you're in Texas now, so, you know, we're all cowboys here, you know. You can go horseback riding. And Krishna's the original cowboy, coward boy. We call Krishna Kalachanji. We also call him Big Tex. He's the big Texan here. This is the first time you saw our deities? Radha Kalachanji? The first time you came in here? Oh, they came another day. Yeah, Kalachanji, the name Kalachanji means one whose face is beautiful like the full moon. Like a full dark moon, beautiful moon, round moon. How do you like our deities? Do you think they're beautiful? I think this deity of Radharani is the most beautiful in the whole world. Very, very nice. And our temple, you like our temple room? Just a group of us, we built this temple. This was a basketball court inside of here. Ratna Radhika. Yeah, Ratna Radhika. Yeah, she's the one. Amazing classes. Yeah, I was talking about teachers and how good they can explain Krishna consciousness. Yeah. So what do you two do in India? What do they do? What do you do in India?
She's a second year student in the university.
What do you study?
Arts. Liberal arts,
maybe. My daughter took a degree in finance, and it was considered an art, a liberal art. But what kind of art do you like?
Psychology.
Oh, really? Oh, that's very good. Especially, you'll become very rich if you live here. There are so many mental illnesses in America. My wife, she's an Indian. She's a South Indian from Singapore. She's supervisor for an entire mental health hospital. Yeah. But also in India now, there's a lot more violence, a lot more crime, a lot more sexual exploitation. It's all, those are all products of mental illness. That's one of the main reasons we try to teach this, the Bhagavad Gita, because it focuses on one's actual identity. And it teaches away this system of yoga, especially the mantra chanting. You can see there's beautiful scientific information in how effective the chanting of the mantras affect your consciousness, how much more peaceful you become. Because you gain a way you can experience happiness from within your heart. You see? The main purpose of all these teachings is how to become happy. You see, what's happened now is because of so much corporate psychology and propaganda for consumerism, so people have become convinced that they can become happy with material things. But what Krishna points out is that everything material is temporary. So if we try to become happy with something that's temporary, our happiness is also temporary. So when the happiness comes to an end, we become miserable, we become sad, we become frustrated, we become angry, we become depressed, we become delusioned, we become violent. See, so all of that is coming from a misunderstanding of how to gain real happiness. So with Krishna, he gives a philosophy, he says, achinta bheda bheda tattva, that there is an inconceivable simultaneous oneness and difference between us and the Supreme Lord. Simple example that Krishna gives, he says, just like a drop of ocean water, it has all the qualities of the ocean. It's liquid and it's salty. But the drop is very small, where the ocean is infinite. So in the same way, we are part and parcel of God, of Krishna. So we have all the qualities of Krishna. We are conscious, we are loving, we have intelligence, you see? But we are very small, where Krishna is infinite. So simultaneously we are one with God in quality, and we are different from God in quantity. You see that? Simultaneous oneness and difference. Oneness in quality, difference in quantity. But because we are spiritual by nature, when we put ourselves in a spiritual environment, we become happy and peaceful. So that mainly deals with who we associate with. The people we associate with, if they are spiritually minded, see, that gives us an experience of a spiritual environment. And then how to create that spiritual exchange, you see, is through sound. Sound affects us more than anything else. Like if someone tells you that they love you, right? It affects us, you see. So there's spiritual sound vibration. In Sanskrit, they're called mantra. So man, it means the mind, and tra means to free the mind from misery, to free the mind from distress, from anxiety. So this mantra, like this Hare Krishna mantra, it directly connects us with the spiritual, with Krishna, with the spiritual nature. You see? So if you try for yourself, you can see this. If you chant like 15 minutes when you wake up, 15 minutes before breakfast, 15 minutes before lunch and dinner, you will see that your consciousness comes to a higher platform, a spiritual platform. And the result of that is that you feel very happy and peaceful. You see? The example Krishna gives is of a fish. A fish. If you take a fish out of water, no matter what you give the fish is disturbed. But when you put the fish in the water, the fish is very peaceful. So the same way, when we put ourselves in a spiritual environment by chanting, you see, by associating like this, then we become satisfied. And our intelligence becomes satisfied. This knowledge, it's been given very scientifically in this literature by Srila Prabhupada, our founder. See, the difference between this literature and religion in general, because mostly intellectual people, they don't like religion. Because religion, without a scientific process to realize the soul in God, is just sentimentalism. I love God. You should be good. You see, we should all be good. You see, it's all sentimental. See, mostly religion, it deals with faith. But faith can change. You can be a Hindu, you can be a Muslim, a Christian, a Buddhist, a Jain, you know. You see, so if you look in the Vedic literature, you don't find the word Hindu. The word Hindu was actually made up by the Muslims. When the Mughals invaded India, they crossed the Sindhu River and they called everyone on the northern side of the Sindhu River Hindu, because there's no S in the Muslim language. But that's like calling everything we do here Americanism. Right, even Buddha came from India. Even Jesus Christ studied in India, according to the Jesuits. So many things have come from India. You see, so all of that is called Hinduism. But if you look in the literature spoken by Krishna, you don't find the word Hindu. The term that Krishna gives to define these teachings, he gives, it's called Sanatan Dharma. So, Dharma, if you talk to an Indian family or watch Indian television, they loosely throw the word around to mean religion or duty. But if you look in the Vikosh Sanskrit dictionary, because your name is for Sanskrit. So if you look in the Sanskrit dictionary, what you'll see is the word Dharma means the intrinsic quality of something. Like I'll give you one example, then I'll stop. Like, the intrinsic quality or the dharma of sugar is what? What is the quality, intrinsic quality of sugar? You're not supposed to answer. He knows all of this. Okay, wait. The intrinsic quality of fire? Is fire cold? Right? If it's not hot, you say that's not fire. If something tastes salty, you say that's not sugar, right? What's the intrinsic quality or the dharma of water? Water. It's liquid, right? Yeah, it's liquid. Not this is wood is not liquid, right? Yeah, so according to the Vedas, the intrinsic quality of all of us, it doesn't matter if you're woman, man, Indian, American, Nepali, you know, Kashmiri?
Yes.
It doesn't matter where you're from or who we are or what age we are. The intrinsic quality within us that does not change is the quality of service. We're all engaged in service. Like when you help someone else, how do you feel? Feel good? Satisfied, right? Because that's our intrinsic quality. That doesn't change like faith. You can be a Christian, a Hindu, a Muslim, a Jain, and we can do service. You see that? This does not change your faith. But this is teaching how to become self-realized, how to understand where does that happiness actually come from. And then ultimately what our spiritual identity is. You see that? It's good, isn't it? Yeah. There's a really nice book. Prabhupada did speak to intellectuals. I think the best person, do you like to watch films on YouTube? There's one of our leading scientists. He passed away recently. His name's Sudha Putta. He was part of an international conference for the synthesis of science and religion. But you can watch him, and he gives amazing discourses. So good. Very good. Really scientific-based, but completely giving you the Vedic knowledge from a scientific perspective. Prabhupada had an axiom. He said that religion without a scientific process to realize the soul in God is simply sentimentalism. And science without an absolute truth, without an ultimate reality, is simply mental speculation. Like when they asked Prabhupada, they asked him about Darwin's theory. Prabhupada said, "Your forefathers may have been monkeys, but mine were not." Right? Because that's just some theory, right? Nobody's proven that. Nobody's proven that life comes from matter. Right? Have you ever seen a dead stone create life? All we've ever seen is life coming from life. So right now we're building the third largest structure in the world. You might be interested. It's in India. It's in our headquarters in Mayapur. You can see it. It's called TOVP, Temple of Vedic Planetarium. It's a Vedic planetarium. Prabhupada wanted to show that this literature, it gives a scientific basis for the origin of life and the creation of the universe. So we're building this planetarium and a university at our headquarters. It's a beautiful project. Your uncle? Yeah, he can show you online. But it's a bunch of young people like you in India that are college students and professors from all over the world, but especially in India. They're all contributing to this project. It's featured on history.com. You should look at it. It's nice. Really nice. Okay, that's all I wanted to say. So thank you. Nice to meet all of you together. It's great to see you together. Wow, and brother and sister, huh? Yeah, I can see you two look very similar. Mm-hmm. So have a great time in Dallas. If I can do anything, Sanatan and I are best friends. We live right behind you. Our house is right here. We have that Krishna cuisine trailer. My wife and I, we cook in the temple for Radhakala Chanji for festivals, and we go outside and we cook. I'm thinking about, when I'm not doing festivals, to use my trailer for doing food relief now, too. You know, since I have it. Yeah. Okay, everybody. So, Hare Krishna. Have a great day. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nice to meet you.